Good evening, everyone. I'm going to talk about something different kind of optimization, which we traditionally use in the context of quality engineering or Taguchi methods, which is called robust optimization. The presentation, typically, I will talk about the definition of quality in the context of robust optimization. There are two kinds of quality, customer quality and engineered quality. Then we spend some time on optimization of products and processes. Then another important topic, the extension of Taguchi methods, is the optimization of multivariate information systems. Then we can spend some time on question and answers and discussion. Okay, there are two kinds of quality in the context of robust engineering. One is called customer quality, what customer wants, like issues related to product planning, species, and product functionality. And there is also another aspect called engineered quality, where we typically, it's not explicitly told by the customers, like pollution, functional variability, and loss to society. Robust engineering primarily focuses on engineered quality. I'm having a hard time to move the slides from here. This is gone, right? Okay, that's okay. It doesn't work. That's fine. Okay. Wait, it works now. The customer quality, like I said, it is primarily focuses on appearance, function, price. It relates to the customer personal income and perceived value of the product. Most importantly, this is the one which determines the size of the market segment of a company. And there are other aspects of the customer quality. The next aspect is called engineered quality. That is the primary focus of Taguchi methods, like what customer doesn't explicitly say, like what engineers must improve. That includes functional failures, operating maintenance, cost pollution. And this will determine the market share within a given segment. The customer quality determines the market, it determines the size of the market. On the other hand, the engineered quality will help us to determine the share within the given segment. Okay. Now, let us talk about optimization of products and processes. I'll cut down my movement because of the mouse, so I'll stay here. In the context of robust engineering, Taguchi differentiates between science and engineering. Like he says, science is to study natural phenomena, and because we cannot change the laws of nature, etc. And the goal of the engineering is to make a product or design a product that does not exist in nature. And at the same time, it should perform the desired function. For example, I have a car. The car should perform the functional, like its intended function, in all usage conditions, like in this weather condition, like when it is snowing or heavy, like raining or hot summer day, the car should move on. Like that, it should perform its intended function. So that is what is called a robust optimization. The performance of a product should not be affected by the noise factors or uncontrollable variation. And there are a lot of studies, like numerous engineering studies that describe how to design a product that performs certain function. But what is missing in this literature is, how do we minimize the failure of a function under various usage conditions? How do we reduce the manufacturing cost by improving the robustness? How to minimize harmful effects to the society, for example, pollution? And these activities, definitely they impact economically the companies and the corporate world. And Taguchi methods play an important role in these activities. And they utilize new approaches to improve the efficiency of the research and development of activities. So the focus of Taguchi methods, like how do we measure the product or process functionality against the downstream noise conditions? And how do we systematically derive the optimum design using what we call orthogonal arrays? I'll take you through the orthogonal arrays in a bit. how do we economically specify the tolerances using the quality loss function? So once you have the design of the product, you find the optimal design for the product, how do we find out the specification? Like what criteria needs to be used for the specification of the for specifications? Okay. Let us talk to you about the key concepts of robust design. Like first thing is what to measure. We need to, for any engineering system, we need to be thinking about measurement. Like what is that we need to measure from an engineering system? And this is called energy thinking. And we also, in Taguchi methods, we introduce what you call a metric called signal to noise ratio. Then ideal function and signal to noise ratios. Ideal function meaning there will be an input to the system, there will be an output system. And output and input are governed by some sort of a functional equation. That is called ideal function. And our aim is to make the product perform its intended function by following the ideal function as much closely as possible. Because ideal situation is different and actual situation is different. The difference is because of the noise factors or uncontrollable variation. Then in the optimization stage, we talk about inner arrays and outer arrays. Again, that is orthogonal array experimentation. Then we have two-step optimization, and once we perform this two-step optimization, then we make predictions for the optimal design. Then we confirm by performing by running the actual experiment again. In the second aspect of the Taguchi approach is the quality loss function and its applications. Like we typically use tolerance design and online quality engineering. Taguchi. He calculates the specification limits based on the function called loss function. The loss function is like the quadratic equation. As we move away from the target, either this side or this side, there will be loss associated. And the best thing is when you design the product, the loss will be minimum of zero when you have the product characteristic at the target value or at the target value. So as we move in either direction, what is happening is you are incurring loss. That is called lossless society. So you need to minimize that loss when you're finding out the specifications for the product characteristic or process variables. Let me explain principles by considering actual example. And I must acknowledge, I should thank Dr. Taguchi for allowing me to use this case study in this presentation. This is related to a braking system. And for any system, we need to have intent. What the intent means, what are we going to do? So then once we identify the intent of a design or a system, then we need to find out what is the input. For example, we are talking about a braking system. The input for the braking system is a braking force on the brake pedal. Then it undergoes various, once you apply the pressure, it undergoes various transformations, then you get the intended output, the stopping force. Like when you apply put the brake force on the pedal, then the car has to stop. Stopping force is the output. So when you transfer the energy from input to the output, there's so many things that take place and so many energy transformations that take place. Even for example, if you are measuring like you have a machine shop and you are measuring, taking measurements of a like diameter of a, let us say, some machine part. The diameter of the part is affected, the measurement is affected by the external temperature, that's called noise factors. These various energy transformations are also affected by what we call uncontrollable factors or called noise factors. And these factors, noise factors for this particular application could be environment, aging, and manufacturing variation. And because of the noise factors, you have unintended outputs like sequel noise, excessive wear, vibration, etc., that will cause poor reliability for the product. So what we do in robust engineering is we calculate what is called signal-to-noise ratio, which is work done by the signal divided by the work done by the noise. The goal is to maximize the signal-to-noise ratio. In other words, we are maximizing the effect of the signal. At the same time, we are minimizing the effect of the noise. So the optimization is done with respect to signal-to-noise ratio first. again, this is a brake rotor subsystem ideal function. In brake system, you have typically a master cylinder, brake line caliper, pad rotor, and wheel tire. And wheel tire will determine the stopping force. Because of the stopping force, the car slows down as intended. So in this particular example, they focused on only pad rotor assembly for the design purposes. So the input signal for this is the pressure. The output is the braking torque. They use, and if you represent the entire system in the form of what you call P diagram or parameter diagram, you have the input. This is the pad rotor assembly, and you have the output. And these are the various noise factors. When I say noise factors, there's environmental conditions, the uncontrollable factors. They are pad wear, pad temperature, wet surface, contamination, poor alignment, etc., etc. And at the same time, you have the control factors where designers have the control, like pad material, pad additives, pad dimensions, etc., etc. So the goal is to, like, you have input signal, and you have the output response. And the input and output is governed by some sort of a linear function, y is equal to beta times m. And this is, if this is an ideal function, the reality will be something like this. It's not exactly like this. The reason is the presence of noise factors and usage conditions. Every customer uses different, and he uses in different way, and there are noise factors. A car that performs well here may not perform well in other countries like India. So in the robust design, what we do is only the control factors. I'm sorry about this. Only control factors is in our control. All other elements of the P diagram, that's parameter diagram, input signal, noise factors, output response, they're not in our control. For example, noise factors, they're uncontrollable, they account for the uncontrollable variation. The input signal is actually based on the customer usage condition. Again, we don't have the control on them. Only the space where we have the control, or we have more degrees of freedom, is control factors. In other words, in robust optimization, we focus on control factors to make the system robust by considering all these elements of the P diagram. So we measure robustness, like I said, in terms of signal-to-noise ratios. And for optimal design, we optimize the design in such a way that the signal-to-noise ratio is maximized. How do we do that? I'll explain with an example. So for this braking exam, these are the various control factors they selected, like pad material, pad additives, etc. There are about 8 control factors. And this is a line pressure is the input signal. They varied at 4 levels, 8, 16, 32, and 64 units. And they have used the two kind of noise factors. They consider all the noise factors, and they compounded them into one factor. For example, the condition of the pad material, the temperature, and the worn-out condition, they all put together into one factor, and they have two levels of the noise factors, the compounded factors. And torque within the braking is also another noise. That's called manufacturing noise. And that's also, they consider two levels, minimum and maximum. And this is the experimental layout. This is called orthogonal arrays. There are a set of experimental. How many of you are aware of experimental design? That's a different subject in statistics. And experimental design, basically what we do is we try various parameter combinations and study the combination, and we study the impact of those combinations on the output. And since if you have many factors, the number of experiments will be many in number. So what we do is we take the fraction of total number of experimentation, and orthogonal arrays is an example of the fractional design. And in this case, we selected, because we had about 8 factors, and we selected a experimental layout which has 18 experiments. For each experiment, we varied the signal factors, like four levels of the signal factors, and we have two noise conditions. And in each case, we calculated braking torque, the minimum braking torque as well as maximum braking torque. And typically, we call this as inner array, and this is outer array, and this is the torque calculation. And this is actual experimental results. Like we for each experiment, this is the these are the various tasks under the given conditions. Once you have this experiment done, then the next part is analyzing the data. That is very key, very important aspect. So let me explain for one first experiment. We have two noise factors, four input signals, and these are the results in each for each breaking torque condition. Then what we calculate is, this is the input signal, these are the amps, and output response, these are the Ys, and we for each input signal we have four output responses. And then we try to fit a least square fit, and we calculate what we call the beta, which is the slope of input and output. And we calculate signal to noise ratio using this equation, the signal to noise ratio 10 times log beta square by sigma square, where beta is the slope of the best fit line and sigma square is mean square around the best fit line. That's the variation. So beta square, maybe you can say this is the signal component of the system, and sigma is the noise component of the system. And once we calculate the signal to noise ratio for all the combination of this, all the combinations of the 18 experimental matrix, then we have, like, for each experimental matrix, we have signal to noise ratio, we have betas. Then what we do is we do what you call a two-step optimization. The first step, what we do is we identify the combination for which the signal to noise ratio is highest or maximum. So we typically do what you call response graphs. We calculate that these are the various levels of the factors, and we calculate the signal to noise ratio at each level of the factors. Then we pick the combination or the level which has highest signal to noise ratio. For example, if you look at this experimental factors, we can choose A1 as the best it has highest SN ratio. Similarly, C1 which has high, or C3 which has high SN ratio, and D3 followed by E1, G1 and H3. Remember, we are not worried about factors B and F at this stage, because with respect to SN ratios, factor B and factor F, they're pretty much same. They're not impacting SN ratio that much. They're slight, relatively flat. So what we do in the first step is we find out the combination that has higher signal to noise ratios, which is A1, C3, D3, E1, Z1, and H3. And we go to the next stage. There we adjust beta. Beta, see, two components. One is beta square by sigma square, right? We identify the combination that satisfies sigma square requirements. Now we are looking at the combination for beta. Beta is our, like, you can say, sensitivity. And if you look at the combination B and F, which were not impacted by the SN ratios, what we do is we select the combination or select the level of those factors that have some impact on beta. For example, in this case, B2 has higher beta, which is desirable. And similarly, F3 has higher beta, that is also desirable. So in the second stage, we accounted for beta. So the optimal combination will be A1, B2, C3, D3, E1, F3, G1, and H3. B and F factors were, the levels for those B and F factors were identified in the second phase of the optimization. In the first phase, we identified the best levels for the other factors. Then for these factors, what we typically do is we have the initial design, and we calculate the optimal design, and we calculate the signal-to-noise ratios. We basically use, first is we predict the SN ratios. Then we actually run a confirmation trial, confirmation experiment, you can say. If you look at if you compare initial design and optimal design, there is a gain of 9.8 decibel units in terms of signal to noise ratio for the optimal design, which is significant. And even in terms of beta, it is 19%. And we can always translate the gain in SN ratios to the variability reduction. So this is the initial design, and this is optimal design. If you look at the for each input pressure condition, the optimal design is fairly consistent. It's more robust in terms of functionality wise. So that is what we look for in robust optimization. So the confirmation trial has been done, and it gave us a gain of 9.8 decibel units, and the efficiency has increased by 19%, reduced weight and size of the brake. The brake, because of the optimal design, the brake rotor assemblies, the size has been reduced and weight also reduced. That saved some dollars. And sequel noise was reduced by 1/20th. The optimized design is lighter, cheaper, and quieter, and more reliable. It was actually a case study performed in Nissan, actually. And this was presented in one of the American Society, American Supply Institute's Taguchi Symposium. So this is about product or process optimization. Any questions so far? Okay. Now let us move on to the next topic, which is like we also use Taguchi methods in optimization of multivariate information system. I like this topic because this is my thesis topic as well. And here in this analysis or optimization, we use Mahalanobis distance as a multivariate distance, and we couple Mahalanobis distance with Taguchi method. That is the reason why this is called Mahalanobis Taguchi strategy, or MTS. MTS is a pattern information processing technique. It is useful to evaluate various patterns in multivariate situations, like, for example, medical diagnosis, face or voice recognition system, inspection system. These are all examples of multivariate system. Anything which has more than one variable is called multivariate case. And it is also useful to identify the driving factors for predicting behavioral patterns. So you must be wondering, like I talked about brake application, what this guy is doing in bank. So in banking industry, typically we are using MTS to predict the behavioral patterns of the customers. So we are doing a big project, like we are predicting customers' behavioral patterns in credit card area as well as mortgage area, and we are identifying the default, the factors that is driving the default behavior, and we try to take actions against those factors so that we understand the behavior of that particular person and try to improve or talk to him or design some sort of strategies. The objectives of MTS is like development of the measurement scale. You have a multivariate case, like you have more than one variable. One of the important things that we need to do is we need to develop a measurement scale. We need to measure, like, what is the degree of abnormality. In the default example, what is the degree of default rate? Then, in order to define a measurement scale, what we need to have in a multidimensional setting is we need to have a set of variables that defines the conditions of a particular entity or patient or person. Then once we know, we need to have a base from which we can measure the distances. Then we need to take the actions based on the degree of abnormality. And we use, again, in this analysis, signal-to-noise ratio as a measure of accuracy of prediction. So we use the SN ratio here also. So let me explain with an example. We have a multivariate situation. Let us consider medical diagnosis as an example. So medical doctor, you go to doctor. Doctor takes several measurements, right? About your blood pressure, cholesterol, extra. And he wants to make a decision about the condition of a patient based on so many attributes. So in order to use this methodology, what we need to have a reference group. Reference group in this case could be a group of people who are healthy. A case today I'm going to show, which is related to medical diagnosis, where doctor, what he did was he chose the reference group from a group of young sports people, like sports persons in Japan. They are considered healthy. He collected measurements of, we worked on liver disease related diagnostic system. And that is your reference group. So then once you have the reference group, that will give you the base or the reference point to the scale. And from the center of the reference group, we measure the distances. And in order to measure the distances, we need to identify the people who are abnormal or who have some sort of a disease. Then if the distance between the reference group center and this person is high, that means the scale can be validated. Like we take the statistical distance, and if the distance is larger, then we say that, okay, the judgment of the doctor is matching with the data. Then in the third stage, what we do is we optimize the system. We may have 200 factors. Out of 200 factors, only 50 may be sufficient for the future diagnosis. We identify those 50. So I'm going to take you through those steps. I just wanted to give you an idea like what we are going to do at high level in MTS. Okay. I told in MTS we are using what you call a Mahalanobis distance. It was introduced by a well-known Indian statistician. His name is Prasanta Chandra Mahalanobis in 1936. It measures the distances in multi-dimensional spaces. You may have two variables, you may have 50 variables, you may have 1,000 variables. You can combine the information about all those variables into one metric or one calculation, which is called Mahalanobis distance. And this is based on multi-dimensional characteristics. And it has been proved that this is superior to other multivariate distances like Euclidean distance, only because of the reason this particular distance considers or takes into account correlations between the variables. In any pattern recognition analysis, in any multidimensional analysis, the correlation between the variables is very important. The correlations, the patterns are extremely sensitive to the correlation. If you don't consider correlations between the variables into account, that means you are missing some information. So like if you doctor look, like usually in medical practitioners, they take information about various variables, look at each factor, and if they are within the specification, they are considering like that person is considered good or bad, right? But that may not be correct judgment because there may be correlations between blood pressure and cholesterol. So we need to take into account the correlation information into account. This is another example of the importance of correlation in like MTS. For example, let us say we have two variables, cholesterol and blood pressure. There are two people, Raj and Sam. And this gray rectangular box is a traditional way of diagnosing a person. Let us say, for example, the Raj and Sam, if you look at the variables, cholesterol and blood pressure independently of each other, then both of them can be called can be considered as normal people because they are within they are in the box. Anything outside the box is abnormal in the traditional analysis. On the other hand, if you take the correlations into account, the picture will be somewhat different. This is your reference group, the elliptical region, and because the Raj and Sam, they are not part of the elliptical region. That means they are not normal. That is because of the correlations between these two variables. If you look at these variables independently, they may be considered as normal, but they are not normal if you consider the correlation into account or take correlations into account. In more precisely in MTS, what we can say is Sam is sicker than Raj. There are two people, and because Sam has higher distance, higher Mahalanobis distance, that way he is sicker than another patient called Raj. This is a mathematical equation to calculate Mahalanobis distance, which you can get in all the books. Only thing that is different from the traditional Mahalanobis distance is in MTS we scale the distance, or scaling may not be a right word. What we do is we divide the actual distance by the number of variables. The only reason is if you do that, the mean of the distances within the reference group is 1, and it can be generalized to any number of variables. So there are basically four important steps in MTS. One is the development of measurement scale. For that, we need to define a base or a reference point. Base or reference point is typically defined by the group of people in medical diagnosis, group of people without any health problems. Then Mahalanobis, construction of Mahalanobis space or unit space. We call it a unit space only because of the reason the mean of the distance within the reference group is 1. Then validation of the scale. Once you have the scale, then in the medical diagnosis case, doctor takes measurements of the people who have some health problem. Doctor knows about that. Then once the distances are high for those people, then the doctor's judgment is in agreement and they're matching. Then we can validate the stage. And the third stage is developmental stage, which is called optimization stage, you can say. We use again orthogonal arrays and signal to noise ratio to identify the important variables. Then we use those important variables for the future diagnosis purposes. Again, in MTS also, we can represent the entire diagnosis system in terms of P diagram. It's called diagnosis systems. We have various variables. The prediction accuracy is the output. and there could be noise factors here too. And let me explain like role of orthogonal arrays in multivariate situations. For example, what we do is when we are trying to find out the important variables that are sufficient to discriminate or separate between good and bad, normal and abnormal, what we do is, this is an example of, let us say we have five factors, each has two levels. We take two levels, one is on or off, or presence or absence. If you were to conduct full factorial experiments, it would be 2 raised to 5, which is 32. Or if we don't have to do that. We can take eight experiments, which is a fraction of 32 experiments. Then we can run these experiments. For example, 1, 1, 1 means you include all the variables. 1, 1, 1, 2, 2 means include x1, x2, x3 in the system, exclude remaining. Similarly, other combinations. We can run all these eight combinations. And for each combination, we calculate the Mohr-Nobis distances, and those Mohr-Nobis distances are converted into are used to calculate X signal-to-noise ratios. Then from the signal-to-noise ratios, we calculate average signal-to-noise ratio of a variable at the level 1, that's on the system, and average signal-to-noise variable at the level 2, which is off the system. Then we calculate difference between those two. If the difference is positive, that means the variable, if it is part of the system, is important. Otherwise, it's not important. That's how we screen the variables. Let me talk about the medical case study. This was done in Japan, and for this example, only doctor considered 200 normal people, sports people, like they have. He knows that they don't have any health problem. Young sports people, and the variables he considered. This is for the liver disease case. Age, sex, total protein in blood, etc., etc. And he considered 36 abnormals. These abnormals were considered, he knows these people have a kind of liver disease. Then what we do, we use this methodology, and we calculated if you look at the distance, these are the distances for normal people, and these are the distances for the abnormal people. You can see the clear separation between normals and abnormals. That means the scale can be validated because there is a good separation between normal and abnormal. And then we typically, since we have 17 factors, the closest, if you have to run full factorial experiment, it should be 2 raised to 17, but there are experimental matrices with 32 experimental runs. In this experimental array, L32 means there are 32 combinations, each at two levels, and you can accommodate 31 factors. And we had only 17 factors. Then we, for each combination, we calculated the signal-to-noise ratios for 32 combination. Then we calculated the average signal-to-noise ratio when the variable is present in the system. And at the same time, we calculated the signal-to-noise ratio when the variable is absent in the system. The gain is minus 1.15 in this case. That means this variable is not important. And for X2 is important because it's 0.19. Then useful variables, based on this analysis, we found X2, X5, X7, X10, 12, 13, 14. That means from 17 variables, you can reduce the number of variables to 8 that are sufficient. And it can give the good separation between normals and abnormals. And we calculate the average with the confirmation run, with the optimal set of variables, we ran a confirmation run. This is the distances, and you can see the with full variable, the variable set, the 17 variables, the average abnormal Mohr-Nobis distance is 60. After optimization is 121. That means by optimizing or by reducing the number of variables, your discrimination power has increased. In other words, some of the variables that are not, they are affecting the accuracy of the scale or discrimination or separation between the normals and abnormals. Again, this can be translated into variability reduction range. If there is a gain of 40% reduction in variability, this signal-to-noise ratio gain can be translated into variability reduction. And another example I would like to talk about is the MTS that was applied in auto marketing application. We did this work in Ford Motor Company. the goal of this study was to recognize buying patterns of customers in five core segments. What we did was we considered core segments like full-size pickup vehicles, compact utility vehicles, luxury cars, VPM, RDA, I don't remember what exactly it means, and basic small. In each case, what they wanted to do, they wanted to find out the buying patterns. At the same time, they wanted to find out the useful variables that are driving the decision, that driving their decision to buy a particular car in the given segment. So they considered about 55 variables. Like they had a huge database called InfoLink. These are variables, this data is basically from survey data. They had attributes from based on the personal views, purchase reasons, and demographic conditions. And for each, what we did was for each combination, we actually did five MTS analysis. And you can see there is some kind of overlap between normals and abnormals in each segment. This is kind of because of the reason we work with survey data. It's not like it's more like it's not a continuous data. It's a continuous in the sense of 1, 2, 3 up to scale of 10. So that's the reason why we can see some overlap between normals and abnormals. And what we in each segment we identified about 20 variables. Top 20 variables based on this kind of analysis, based on calculation of gains in SN ratios, and we identified about 15 to 20 variables, and those variables were focused for the designing sales strategies in the given segment. And this is another case example. This was related to. This was conducted in Japan again by National Research Laboratory of Metrology, which is part of Ministry of Trade and Industries. And what the goal was, like, they wanted to optimize fire alarm sensors so that the alarm sensors should recognize all the fire conditions. If according to international standards, there are 17 different fire conditions or situations. What was happening was the fire alarm, which consists of smoke sensors and temperature sensors, sometimes this was conducted in one of the hotels. It used to give trigger even though there is no fire situation, like barbecue cooking or something like that. So there were a lot of false alarms, and they wanted to minimize those things. So like what they were doing, the fire alarm system was tuned in such a way that based on the output of smoke sensors and temperature sensors, it was able to, if the temperature is high, then smoke level is high, then alarm used to trigger. That's why even though it was not fire situation, for example, barbecue cooking, the alarm was used to trigger. Then what did they used the MTS approach, and they used the output from the smokes and temperature sensors as output variables. They calculated the Mohr-Noble distances based on those outputs, and this is before I'm talking. I jumped ahead. This is like, for example, this is a barbecue cooking. The percentage of smoke is high, the percentage of smoke concentration high. The alarm is to trigger. Then what they did was they used the MTS approach, and they used, rather than using the output of the smoke sensors and temperature sensors as indicators to trigger the alarm, they used the Mohr-Noble distance, which is also based on the output. Again, it captures the correlations into account. It takes correlations into account. Then, in addition to increasing the reducing the number of false alarms, they also minimized the number of sensor setup. Like they were having initially 10 sensors in each case. We have smoke and temperature sensors. They reduce the number of sensors to 4, with optimization. In Japan, at least, they were very pretty happy with the results of the experiment, and this has been implemented there. And another thing in multivariate analysis is the direction. I'm just giving flavor of this direction of abnormalities. So, like I said, in MTS, we need to distinguish between good and bad, right? You have a reference group. Anything beyond the reference group in the medical diagnosis is abnormal. But in some cases, like student admission system, there is average group, and people with very low scores, that is also one group, and people with extremely high score, that's also another group. That's not average group, but that's also abnormal in a good sense. So we need to be able to distinguish between good abnormals and bad abnormals. And what we do is we typically, what we do is we use orthogonalization process called Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization process. You have the original vectors, you convert them into orthogonal vectors. Then you take some sort of, you take the signs of the orthogonal vectors. Again, we need to know the criteria of the each variable, like larger the better is good, or smaller the better is good, or nominal the better. Depending on that, and using the signs of Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization process, we can find out what direction the abnormal is moving. So that's another application. I think this particular Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization process is useful not only in finding out the direction of abnormalities, even it's also useful in other situations where we have problems of inverting the big matrices. So I don't know, like when you are inverting the matrix, like usually if you have larger matrices, because of the, if you have multicollinearity situations, things like that, the determinant of the matrix tend to become zero. Because the distance is calculated using inverse matrix, and because of the high correlation, the determinant is becoming zero, that distances what you calculate may not be accurate. Even to some extent, such kind of situations can be overcome to significant degree by using Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization process, where we just not take the original vectors, orthogonalize those vectors, and using those vectors we can still calculate the Mahalanobis distance rather than inverting the matrix. Computationally we found it's more useful. We didn't do any, we don't have any proof for that, but I can prove it through the case studies. And another application of Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization process is not only multicollinearity and low sample sizes. If the sample size, usually if you have k variables, the number of samples that is required, the sample size should be 2k. But if you, in industry it's hard to get sometimes the samples, required number of samples. Even in low samples, small sample situations, we found Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization process is performing better. And you can compare this methodology with the classical traditional multivariate analysis methods. I think you may be aware of a lot of tools and techniques in the traditional multivariate literature. It's different from traditional methods traditionally we have tools like we have techniques like discrimination classification methodologies, stepwise regression, or multiple regression. Those are primarily is a classification tool, like good or bad, two populations. You classify into one population, other population. And then here in MTS, we mainly focus on the measurements, like aspect. Like we have only one group, that's the reference group. Anything beyond the reference group is called unique, is considered unique. And the distance we calculate from the reference group only. In other words, we have only one population or one group. The group is required to calculate the distance, the correlation information, et cetera, and you calculate the distances from the group. So that's one of the differences I can say, like classification versus measurement. And the normals versus abnormals. In traditional approaches, we have two, like you have good group, a normal group, and abnormal group. You have two groups, and you calculate the distances based on that. In discrimination analysis also, you do the same thing. You have the correlation structure for the good group, normal group. You have the correlation structure for the abnormal group. But here, we have only one reference group, and all the distances, non-normal conditions, or all non-normal distances are obtained from the reference group. So this is the reason why we do is we consider all the abnormalities are unique. They cannot be combined into one population. A person may be abnormal because of high blood pressure. Another person may be abnormal because of high cholesterol. So they cannot be combined into one population. That's why we consider each abnormality as unique. And only the thing that discriminates that abnormality with respect to normal group is the Mahalanobis distance. And sometimes, this is another thing, the probabilistic and data analytic, the metrics like signal to noise ratio and all, they don't require assumptions on the distribution. For example, most of the techniques like stepwise regression, they are based on the fact that input variables are normally distributed. It's more like a data analytic tools rather than probability-based tools. And another important difference between traditional methods and this method is dimensionality reduction. We have principal component analysis, right? In multivariate analysis, that's typically used in most of the industries too. What we do is the principal component analysis is a technique to study the variability of the variables, the goal is to minimize the number of variables to explain maximum variability. So what in typically done is you have, let us x1, x2, xk, you calculate principal components y1, y2, yk, and they are linear transformation or linear functions of these x1s. But even to calculate one principal component, you need all the variables. It talks about dimensionality reduction in terms of principal components, but not in terms of the original variables. So that's the difference between dimensionality reduction, like in terms of original variables and in terms of, for example, principal components, like a linear combination of the original variables. And we also did some work by comparing MTS with the artificial neural networks, which is also a similar kind of tool. And one thing is that there are five important points, both of them are they also try to measure the degree of abnormality. Even in neural networks, we can measure the degree of abnormality. And both are data analytic, no doubt about that. And what we found is that dimensionality reduction is somewhat difficult in neural networks. They have several algorithms within the neural network framework, but reducing the dimensionality reduction is somewhat problematic there. And relationship between input and output in both methods you can find out. And another important thing is randomization. In neural networks, the networks tend to forget old patterns. They remember only newer patterns. So randomization is a very important aspect in neural networks. Whereas here, we don't need to worry about the randomization. So those are differences between artificial neural networks and MTS. That's all I have. Actually, I should have prepared a slide. There is a lot of work going on expanding MTS into different areas, and we have whole set of we have some tools for the prediction purposes, some tools for the diagnostic purposes, and we also have cases where we have, for example, in reference group, you have a particular variable with same value everywhere. That means zero standard deviation. So how do we take care of that such kind of variables? We actually have a patent on that. Even variables with zero standard deviation, they need to be included, and they give some kind of they provide some sort of a information gain or info gain, and we need to take care of that variable into account. Or take care of that variable also in the analysis. So those kind of advances have been we are working on those kind of advances, and maybe later time maybe I can share with you. So that's all I have for today. If you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them. Thank you. Yes. For example, that's a good question. In Bank of America, right now we are focusing on, we have data of 80 million customers, and we have 1524 variables right now. We will have more because we have 1524 variables from the credit bureau data as well as internal Bank of America data, and we are going to have some more data for these customers, like in terms of voice, because last 2 years have been very recession years, right? People take the phone, they call banks saying that they cannot pay the bill, something like that. Voice, we want to recognize the voice patterns, how good he is, how confident he was when he was talking, and did he call several times. And we also have the data for the internet, how many times he went to the online banking system, what did he do with the online banking system. So we are capturing that. We have 1524 variables right now. We will have another 2000 variables. And one thing what we wanted to do is, like you suggested, we wanted to use, before going to the MTS, we wanted to use some kind of stepwise regression or other machine learning techniques to initially screen the variables. So we maybe have multicollinearity, looking at the correlations. That may be a simple step, but stepwise regression is somewhat more sophisticated to find out important variables at the beginning. Then we will feed this. Although I told this is a data analytic tool, because that's what Taguchi never wants to assume any probability distributions or anything like that. But we found there is a value. You use traditional methods like stepwise or multiple regression. Stepwise is a better approach. Then we reduce the number of variables. Then you feed the data into MTS. Then further you reduce the number of variables. Then those variables, what we do, what the goal of our strategy group is to find out important variables. We have to give those important variables to other, like we have within the bank. For the credit card, we have one data analytics group. For mortgages, we have one data analytics group. We give them important variables. Then they will feed those variables into their models to actually calculate the default rate or whatever it is. Did I answer that?
Do you have another question? Well, I actually have a question regarding the example of the rating system. So I was wondering if this application to an extent depended on the noise being Gaussian.
Could be. Yeah, we haven't studied the again we have not taken into account the noise distribution. Yeah, that would have been, we compounded the noise. Maybe that the Gaussian distribution, maybe Gaussian that way of doing is maybe better approach. We haven't studied that. Yeah, what typically in this case we do what we call, because if the number of noise factors is high and number of signal factors is high, the combinations we have to run will be many. Of course, nowadays we can use the simulation-based experiments. That's a different thing. But this was a hardware experiment that was conducted, so we haven't gone into those details. Thank you.
Alright, so I guess we can declare the event over.
Okay, I could manage. How was it? Good? Not as good as you.
Hate to say that you guys have 25 variables and all these confidential information.
I didn't name the variables either.
Yeah.